Hello everyone, so welcome to the W3C CCG meeting. So today our main agenda, we are very glad to invite Mike, Nick, and from Doc.io to kind of present their DocCert as well as their web the new Web3 ID products. But before we go get into the main agendas, I just want to talk about a couple IP notes as well as the introductions, reintroductions, and action items and work items if needed, if there's any. All right, so a quick reminder of the Code of Ethics and Professional Conducts. I think the key thing is just making sure that we create a psychologically safe environment. This is not to say we cannot have differing opinions. We welcome different opinions and hard questions, but at the same time, let's just make sure that we acknowledge each other's voices and make sure that we be respectful of each other. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So there are links in the emails as well. These minutes and audio recording and everything said on this call are archived in the meetings. We're actually working on publishing them in a more timely manner right now. So that if there are a couple meetings that we haven't had the meeting minutes published, just give us a couple of days and weeks, and then we'll get it done. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. You can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, and Q- to remove yourself to the queue. If you're not on the chat, simply ask to put on the queue and be brief so that the rest of the queue can have the chance to chime in if there's a lot of questions. I think now is are there any new members, like introductions and reintroductions of the new members of the CCG meetings? Please introduce yourself. Rishi, please. All right, any other one wants to take a moment to kind of introduce or reintroduce themselves? All right, any announcements or reminders? All right, sorry. Rishi, do you want to take a moment to kind of introduce yourself to the community? Oh, sorry. I think you have some browser technical difficulties. All right. I think once we figure that out, please feel free to add yourself to the queue. And next, we have this meeting every Tuesday. So feel free to speak up anytime needed. All right, any announcements or reminders? All right, updates on the work items. I think last week we approved a work item. Any other updates on that? All right. Oh, Dimitri. Please.
Sure. So not a formal update, but just to say that this past week, the Rebooting Web of Trust conference happened in the Netherlands, The Hague. So expect lots of juicy papers and potential work items to come your way to the CCG. So there was really good credentials related papers worked on by a number of parties. So. Just a sneak preview.
Thank you. Any other announcements or reminders? All right. So let's get to the main agenda, and then we'll leave the last 5 minutes for any other announcements if it comes up or introductions and reintroductions. So, you know, today we have the pleasure to kind of invite Nick, the CEO of Doc Labs, and Mike to kind of show us about what they're working on at the Doc.io, in particular the Doc Certs and the Web3 ID products, the new signing with Ethereum and Web3 ID products that they've launched. You know, I read quite a bit about it, like on LinkedIn and different parts of the web, and I thought, you know, they could have great experiences to share in regards to implementing open standards, maybe trade-offs in designing their solutions, as well as the thoughts on how do we actually find a product market fit. So please welcome them. Thank them for taking the time to kind of present, take the time to present at W3CCG and doing a demo as well. So that without further ado, I'll pass the baton to Nick and Mike. Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. Can you guys hear me okay and see my screen?
Yep, perfect.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks to Harrison, Mike, and Kimberly for inviting both myself and Mike on to speak. I've certainly lurked in the community for a while now, but it's nice to kind of be part of the of things a little bit more, and certainly I'll, you know, make sure that I try and do that a lot more moving forward. So I'm Nick Lambert, I'm the CEO of Doc Labs. I'm going to be joined, as I said, by Mike, who is our solution architect, who's going to be taking us through very bravely through a live demo today. It's of a production system, so hopefully we shouldn't have any issues. And I'll run through some intro slides. I'll keep those very brief because nobody wants to sit through someone else's slide deck. So I'm kind of well aware of that, but it would just help keep me on track and help frame the discussion a little bit. So the demo that Mike's going to look at for us is we have a authentication and authorization solution that uses VCs, and we call that Web3 ID. So kind of like sign in with Google, but without all the kind of privacy issues that you would see there. And also Mike will also run through a no code solution, which is basically a issuing and verification platform that we have, which is called Certs. I sincerely hope you find this interesting, and really we're trying to come at this with just a view of sharing this with you. We're really at pains to try and not make this salesy. I've seen that type of presentation go down particularly badly with open source communities. So my sincere hope that this comes across as more informative and just in a sharing manner. Very brief bit about me. I've started working life at IBM in kind of project management and procurement positions. I learned a lot there, but I also learned I didn't like working in large companies. And so since then, I worked in a lot of startups and small companies. And then in 2011, I started working for a Scottish technology startup called Madesafe, which worked really in the decentralized storage space. And that really kind of turned me on to the power of decentralization and all the kind of different things that it can offer. And I'm based in Scotland, and it's about 30 minutes south of Glasgow. Running order for today will just be intro to Doc the company. I'll keep that very brief. A little bit about the kind of tech stack or the suite of products that we have. Mike will do a demo, and then I think we'll catch some questions and hopefully some answers after the presentation. So Doc is a Swiss-based company, Doc Labs AG. We were established in 2017. We're now a team of 15, and we are based in about 10 different countries worldwide. The split's about 50-50 between having technical staff that work on, you know, the network, the blockchain that we have, or work on the apps or the mobile app that we have. And then another 50% is the operational side. We're early in our commercialization journey, so I'm happy to share that with you all as well. We are, as a company, still use case agnostic with regards to how you can apply the technology. The blessing and curse of verifiable credentials is that they are so widely applicable but also the kind of commercialization headache of like, where do we focus? Kind of share that journey with you a little bit. But what we're seeing in the early days, at least, is kind of workforce compliance and health and safety training seems to be some interesting use cases coming forward. I think a lot of these industries are still using technology that's obviously easy to copy, lots of PDFs that are being altered, and obviously potentially making firms liable for untrained or uncompliant staff. And so we're finding that we're making some small inroads there, which is interesting. And education is one, as you would expect, that is going to be prevalent. But what we have also found as we've gone is that bricks and mortar universities and things like that are very slow moving. And so in order to try and get a better understanding of things like product market fit and getting feedback about your product, we've tended to have found working with smaller and medium-sized enterprises to be kind of more revealing to us and helpful at the stage that we're at. But like I say, if you get any questions about that in the Q&A section, I'd be happy to pick those up for you. In terms of the products or the tech stack, I'm not sure how I should really be explaining this, but these are the kind of main offerings that we have. What Mike will guide us through today is DocCerts. Using a no-code platform, I obviously would understand that this call would probably have more technical people, developers or technologists on it. Just use the no-code platform because it's pretty easy to show what it is, and Mike can talk a little bit about what's happening behind the scenes as he goes. We're also going to show Web3 ID, which I kind of introed a little bit, but it's really a kind of privacy preserving authentication and authorization token of sorts. We also make Doc available via an API for developers. And we won't be previewing that today, but we'll show DocCerts, which uses that API. We also have a wallet SDK that we make available for obviously people to integrate our wallet features into their own apps. And we have a wallet which is available in both stores right now, which is available for kind of storing and managing VCs and DIDs, and that's something that will be getting a lot of work done to over the coming months. And then finally, we have as our kind of registry, we have our own blockchain. So we originally had used an Ethereum chain, which we found right around the time of CryptoKitties launching to be congested and extremely expensive to the point of kind of being non-viable. So we started at that point in, I think, 2019, developing our own chain, which is based on Parity's Substrate, which is a framework for building your own custom blockchain. So that's what we use as our registry behind the scenes. And then would be remiss on a call like this, maybe not to kind of mention the standards that we try and adhere to. So we use the verifiable credentials data model, the decentralized identifiers version 1, and also on the Web3 ID product, we keep in line with OAuth 2.0. But maybe Mike will mention that a little bit more. So, Mike, if I can pass over to you, I'll stop sharing my screen and let you jump in. Was there any kind of questions about that before we get started? Over to you, Mike.
All right, sounds good. All right, so I think you can see my screen now.
Yep.
All right, so I've got two screens up here actually showing. One is my browser, so that's the DocCerts thing, and the black thing on the right is actually our wallet app. So you'll get a bit of a peek at what that looks like as I do this demo as well. So I thought I'd start with the Web3 ID just because we have it as an entry point into our DocCerts, so sort of an easy way to sort of work it in. And as Nick said, Web3 ID is started as sort of a way, you know, how do we make adoption of using your DID as an identifier for you easier to use, easier to share. You know, everyone's of course used to signing with Google and signing with Facebook, and you know, we have it right here, signing with Google and GitHub. But there's obviously downsides to doing that. There's a lot of privacy there. You can be tracked a lot more easily, that kind of thing.
So like, okay, this decentralization of identity thing, how do you make that easier? How do you make it simpler for people to use? So that, well, let's see if we can build the idea of a Web3 ID. And of course, Web3 is sort of a marketing thing, but it's how do we use Web3 ID to allow people to do the same thing, but sign in using, you know, a DID in their wallet that they control. And they can have multiple DIDs. So like in, on my wallet here, you can see I've got three different DIDs, in here. So I could choose any one of them, or I could add a new one, create a new one, whatever I wanted to sign in with it. And it's sort of just the idea of, you know, you can present different identities to different places. So if you use Google, then you've got one Google thing, unless you have multiple emails, of course, but you can, you kind of get stuck in this thing where Google knows everything you do, no matter where you go. They track you everywhere, or Facebook, whoever you're using. So this allows you to compartmentalize a little bit more. Like obviously you could have one DID for every site you go to if you want to, but that becomes its own nightmare. But at least, you know, you could do something about after you're, where you've got buckets, where you got like your work bucket, your social bucket, your banks bucket or whatever. That kind of thing. So it's kind of the idea of how do you make, you know, now you've got a decentralized identity, how do I use it? So again, we went with OAuth 2.0 just to try and get into a standard that's well known and well used by developers. So it's not reinventing a wheel. It's not trying to convince people to change the standards they already use, which there's a couple of sort of weird things like user lookups and stuff. You get nothing back from us because we don't track anything. And if you're curious about how we're doing all this, I will just mention that, our auth server code is fully open source. You can find it on our Doc Network GitHub page. If you want to go poke around and see what we're doing in there, feel free. It's pretty small. There's not a lot of code to it. And we don't track much in there or really anything. There's a little small cache that keeps stuff briefly but doesn't stick around for very long. But anyway, so to use it, it's very simple. You click on the button, sign with Web3 ID. It shows a QR code. And now I just need to get my phone to wake up. All right. Yeah, I think it's going to scan. Here we go. So it scans. So here on the wallet, when you have scanned it, you're presented with the option here. So you want to choose which DID you want to use. So I'm just going to use my work one for this. You provide a name. And you can provide an email. So the email and the name are actually optional. It's up to whoever is integrating with the Web3 ID authorization to choose what details they want from you. In a very pure decentralized way, they could say they don't want anything. For us, we're asking for your name and your email address because obviously we are a business, so we want to know who's using our system and signing into us. So we are asking for that. But if you wanted to integrate with this, you wouldn't have to. That's not required. And then we just store it locally in the wallet as a convenience. So next time you come back, you'll get prompted again to retype everything. It's just kind of available. So I'll say, all right, approve that. And as you can see, right now signed in to DocCerts. So I didn't have to enter an email. I didn't have to go find an email link and click or anything like that. It's just done. And in the background, what we did there was from the wallet, we sent a self-signed verifiable credential. So there's actually a VC being sent in the background and it didn't have to be a VC. It could have been any message that we signed using our keys and using the keys to verify it's us. But by using a VC, it's using stuff we already have. Like we already have all the utility functions and all that around VCs. So why not use what we have, right? So it just made sense technically for us to do that solution. So that's sort of what's going on in the background. So VC gets sent to the background, to the auth server. It verifies that, you know, you have the keys. You're the owner of that credential that did and it lets you in. And now that did is associated with your user in here, which brings us into DocCerts. So that's the next stage. So DocCerts, this has started out as a lot of things in the startup world, and I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, as kind of a proof concept. So we built our REST APIs with the idea, you know, of supporting developer communities to get into VCs and DIDs and everything. But we're talking to a lot of customers who didn't have the development teams of their own to sort of work with REST APIs, or they're having a hard time sort of visualizing what it would look like. So like, oh, let's throw together an issuer portal. Sort of give them a demo app to affiliate with. And now it's kind of taken on life of its own as these things often do. But this is sort of, it's our issuer portal. We now have customers who exclusively use this. We have some who use the API and work with it. Cause it's got some of your dashboardy sort of things. You can control your API, you know, your keys and, we can support webhooks and that kind of stuff in here. Links to your documentation, all that. So, you know, it's got the developer pieces to it, but it's also where you can come in and issue credentials. So when you go to issue your credential, the first thing it's going to ask for is who's issuing it. We don't generate any profile for you or anything right away to begin with. You have to generate one yourself. So the first thing that it's asking me to do here is to create my issuer profiles. This is a DID. And you put a name on it. So we'll just say demo mic. You can choose your key type. We support these three key types. And most people never change it. So it'll probably only be that. You can add a logo if you want to upload a picture and that kind of thing. Won't bother with that at the moment. All right, so we have a DID. Now the next thing is to create a schema. So right now we have these two default schemas, basic and university degree. They're very basic, very generic. Like Nick was saying, we're very generic in what we've done so far. We haven't specialized in too many ways. For customers who want it, we can add more customized ones, but anyway, we'll just go with the defaults here. I'm just going to pick the basic one. And so this is a new thing we've added here. If you want to have a pretty presentation of your credential, you can now build one of those. And again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. This is a basic WYSIWYG editor. Allows you to drag around logos and text and that kind of stuff, as you would expect, just to get a template out of it. So let's continue with editor design. And in here, this is where you enter the details. So you can import, if you have a CSV or a spreadsheet, you can import it that way. So if you want to do a bulk issuance, you can do that pretty easily. I don't, so I'm just going to do a very quick one here. And here, the subject ID, it can be a DID, it can be an email, it can be just some employee ID, sort of up to the issuer, whatever they want the subject ID to be. So I'm just going to say demo 123 or whatever, 134. That's me. Details. As you'd hope with the credentials, you can choose to expire them. So we can do that. We can change the issuance date. So if you want to backdate when it was issued, maybe you didn't get around to issuing the credential for a couple days after they passed whatever tests or whatever you need to do, you can do that. And then there's options that these are applied to everybody that you're issuing to. So if you had multiple people, they'd all get these ones. So persisting the credentials. This is something we struggled with a little bit when we were first working on this, because the idea of persisting a credential kind of runs against some of the ethos of, you know, the decentralized world, because we are, if you persist it, it's on one of our centralized databases. Now, we do let you set the password, so we can never decrypt it. We can never look at it ourselves. But the main reason that sort of, or one thing that drove us to this was the idea of, we want to make it scannable with a QR code for sharing easily and that kind of stuff. And we didn't have the wallet at the time, and not everyone was going to have a wallet. So how do you do that in like a PDF? And we found the JSON was too large to jam it into a QR code. It would fit for very, very small credentials, but as soon as you had any kind of details or a logo or something they had to include, it wouldn't fit. So we ended up doing this persist thing. It's optional. Again, if privacy matters to you and you want to go purely decentralized, you don't have to do it. And it's sort of highly recommended for that. But that option is here. And a fairly weak password. You can generate a PDF for it, which will just, you know, give you a sort of prettier view of the thing. It goes along with the JSON-LD that you get as well. You can make it revocable, and you have the option of anchoring it on the blockchain. So all these things can do. And if you anchor on the blockchain, it's just a hash. It's not the full details or anything. It's still hidden away. And that's it. And if I had more than one issuer profile, because through some scenarios where people might have more than one, you can totally switch which one you are, but we'll use the one I've got. We issue your credential, which sometimes takes a moment or two. There we go. And now I can download it. It's as simple as that. It's a zip file where you can view the credentials. So here it is in our view here. And if I click on this link, again, it's password protected. And there it is. Very basic, very simple. We didn't choose a fancy design, so it's a very ugly design. But there you go. That is basically your credential is issued. That QR code could be scanned and entered into the wallet. Won't go through that right now, but it's pretty basic. Again, scan it, type your password, hit the input, and then in your credentials, you can see, you know, multiple credentials in here, in your wallet, that kind of thing. And that's really about it. If you want, we go into details about specifics about technology, like our DocCert is all JavaScript backend, using Next.js as a framework. And the wallet is React Native. So our SDK is React Native. Well, the wallet SDK is React Native SDK. Yeah. And if anyone has any questions beyond that, or if Nick, you want to jump back in, but that was sort of all I had to show.
I don't have anything more, Mike. Thanks for kind of running through that. And I kind of figured that we'd probably get a few questions. So good that we've left plenty of space for that.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mike, for the demo. I have one quick question. So when you're signing in with a Web3 ID, does it require the Doc app to be installed to use that? And if it does, like, a lot of users actually don't want to download another app. So how do we kind of overcome that obstacle?
Mm-hmm. So as of today, yes, you do need to use our app. But that is where the React Native SDK comes in. That if another, like one of our clients or anybody else wanted to use it, they could. So they could put that functionality into their own app and build it out that way. So it could get integrated into any number of apps to be able to support it. And that's one of the reasons we're building the React Native SDK, is so we can share that with other people, not just us, and not lock. We don't want to have that vendor lock in specifically to us for this. We want more people to use it. We're not charging for Web3 ID. You can also stand up your own backend for it. So again, like that open source project for it, you can go stand it up wherever you want. So again, that could give you the freedom to modify it yourself or do what you do with it as well.
And then I also have another question in regards to the blockchain part. Like, where does the blockchain play into the entire ecosystem? Are you using the blockchain just to anchor the DIDs, or like, are you doing something else? Like, for example, earlier you mentioned about you can put in some hash of the verifiable credentials in the blockchain. So I'm just wondering, where does the Doc blockchain kind of play into this thing? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as you noted, if you anchor a credential, it is stored to the blockchain. If you don't anchor to the blockchain, then the blockchain doesn't know about your credential. That's the only sort of, other than the DID, the only time it gets tied. And our DID docs get written to the blockchain as well. So it's really those are the two primary use cases for our blockchain, is the anchored VCs and the DIDs themselves.
Got it. And then a quick follow-up question. I saw that Doc also has a token, and I'm wondering, how does the kind of token and transactions play into the entire thing? Because can someone actually transact DIDs and VC hashes, or how does the transaction work?
Uh-huh. So yeah, so with the DocCerts and with our REST API, we kind of hid that away. We manage the tokens for you, and we also manage the keys, which again was a debate we had with ourselves. Again, it's, you know, more controlled in the centralized body than you probably want in the real world. But then what we were coming across was a lot of our customers, again, didn't want to have to deal with managing tokens, didn't want to have to deal with managing keys. So sort of a pragmatic solution to go with what we have. But that being said, we do have above the blockchain, we have a JavaScript SDK that can do all the blockchain transactions through it. And when you're doing that, you can provide your own keys, you can provide your own tokens, and that sort of detail. So you can still build your own solution on top of the Doc blockchain using that SDK without involving us, and then you have full control over the tokens and things. So you don't see the tokens here in what I've done here. If I was to generate my own DID in the wallet app, where'd it go? There we go. Then if I choose to create a doc DID, right now we only support DID key and DID doc, then I'd have to be able to specify some tokens to pay for it, which I don't have any in this this test account at the moment, so I can't go through this. But that's the only place right now in the wallet, as far as its DIDs and VCs go, that you would see anything about the tokens. Although you can do your own transactions, sending, receiving, buying, that kind of stuff through the app as well. But yeah, for most of the docs or stuff in the API stuff, you don't actually deal with the tokens directly.
Another purpose and the utility that we have, Harrison, for the token was, we're also around governance. So it's obviously a decentralized network as well. So if people are looking to make changes to the network costs or how it's run and managed, that's separate to dock the company. So it's used as a kind of voting mechanism or a way to raise proposals or referenda on the network. And then people also, people being token holders would then potentially vote on those issues as well. And also we have 50 validators. So it's a public chain, so it's not permissioned. So we have 50 independent validators all running nodes on the network, and they obviously need to be compensated in some way for running those nodes. And so the token serves as a kind of automated, you know, kind of reward mechanism for doing that as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick and Mike. If anyone has any questions, please type in Q plus.
I think I saw Keith had a question go by. I'm just trying to find it. How does the dock team view interoperability moving forward? So yeah, that's a good question. We certainly, by sticking with standards, we think, you know, trying to maintain interoperability that way. We think it's obviously a really good thing if we can get wallets to be able to import and export each other's credentials, each other's DIDs, that kind of thing. We are very open to the idea. Obviously right now we've been very focused on our own, but I think in the future you'll see us start bringing other groups and other implementations into our credentials as well. So I think it's ongoing, and I think it just needs everyone kind of working together on it. I don't know, Nick, if you wanted to say anything more on interoperability or?
No, I think you've covered it. I don't think there'd be anything more to add. I think it's just something that's very important to us. And what's the point of building software multiple times in multiple different ways? It's, you know, very slow progress that way. So we're certainly keen to be a part of something and build stuff that other people can use as well in different ways than what we'd envisioned. But I think you covered it well.
Yeah, and just one other thing to throw in there is the other standards we're kind of looking at for sort of interoperability and communication are sort of the DIDCOM and the ARIES standards. We've been playing around with them, looking at them, because again, as you get to interoperability, you have to have you communicate. It's good to have a JSON object that represents your VC or whatever, but you still have to be a way of sharing it. So we've been looking at those sorts of standards. And again, we want to stay standards based on how we do that kind of stuff and not go reinventing the wheel. There's been a lot of people spend a lot of good time coming up with these ideas and these standards. It's in our best interest to make use of them.
So we have three people in the queue. Andrew, do you want to hop on and ask you a question?
Sure, thanks. I was just curious about the PDF version of the credential. I think you had options to verify the credential using the QR code and maybe to import it into a wallet directly from a QR code. I wasn't sure if that only applies to anchored credentials or...
It only applies to persisted credentials to do it with the QR code, because we need to know where to get it from. As I was mentioning, the QR code itself, unless you make it a massive QR code, it's too small to be able to house all the data you need for most credentials. You need it to be persisted in order for that scanning for verification or import to work.
Okay, thanks.
I think, Andrew, as well, like the part that we did, maybe didn't show is the verification aspect, which I think you mentioned in your question as well. So you could drag and drop the JSON of the credential into certs, and it would do a verification of the credential by way of also just checking the signatures and things of that nature. But you could also use it for that as well.
Great. Thank you.
Phil, do you have a question? Oh, Phil?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Just took a second to connect. Two questions, actually, if I may. The first is, you mentioned your interest in interoperability and such, and I just wanted to know if you were planning and participating in the upcoming JFF VCEDU interoperability Plugfest 2, as it's referred to.
I don't think that's on our radar. I do think we contributed to the last Plugfest, Mike. I'm trying to remember. I think we contributed to that.
Pretty sure we did, but no, I don't think this one's hasn't really come across our discussions, unfortunately.
I'm sure there are several people on the call be happy to send you the contact information about it and such. It's, I believe it's in November, and it will be a true interoperability test where issuance of a credential will be expected to go into two different wallets and then rendered properly from those wallets. So that was the first question. The second question, you mentioned your backend network, but I don't believe you mentioned what it is you're using for that purpose.
So our backend network is our own. We built our own, so it's just the doc network, and is built using Substrate, which is the same framework that Polkadot uses.
Yep. That's a good answer, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. If someone could share those details, that slipped off our radar. So yeah, I'd appreciate if you could send the Plugfest details over. That'd be appreciated.
I'll look for it now and put it in the chat.
Thanks. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks. Rishi? Do you mind coming on mute? I think you have a question. You have the floor.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Lovely. Hey, thank you so much. And thanks so much, Nick and Mike, for the time. It's super helpful. So I'm new in the space. I've been here for about 3 months, and I don't have a especially deep technology background. And so I've been going through the sort of education problem, so I could resonate with when you were saying you could take that to different segments and customers, and you're agnostic right now. So I just wanted to understand from that point of view, when you have these conversations, at what levels do you need to have educational conversations, like starting from like the technology right up to like the application, or, and in the places where you've seen inroads, what has been, easier? What is it something that's already been established as common ground? Thank you.
Yeah, no worries, Rishi. So in terms of like the conversations, were you meaning that at what level should we be having the conversations with people that are interested? Like, is that what you were meaning there?
In terms of the conversations, when you've been like looking at different use cases and at different partners for this, okay. The education could be at very different levels, right? You could have to start with like right down to the technology, up to like the application and how it would work in terms of the user journey. So, does this involve like multiple levels of conversations across each of these topics?
Yeah. I think we start from the business perspective first and then make sure there's a proper business case and use case for it. And then we'd start to see what we can figure out technically. So the use cases that we have gone after are ones where we can see a clear benefit for all of the actors in the ecosystem. So there's a benefit, particularly for the issuer, because quite often with this technology, it's the issuer that's the one that's ultimately going to pay at the start. And that shouldn't necessarily be the way it should always be, because other people within the chain, if you like, are deriving a benefit as well. But we often try to make sure, of course, that there's an easily demonstrable benefit for the issuer. So for example, in education, you can quite clearly say, look, that would make your university or college or school maybe more appealing to students, because they have something that's theirs that they control, and not everyone offers something like this. And you can explain the technology, which I think most young people who are interested in technology would find super interesting. So from that point of view, the issuer has like many clear benefits there. And because they're paying, they would need to see that. The use cases where there's still really interesting use cases, but the business is kind of a bit murky would be something like reusable KYC, which is often, used as a great use case for verifiable credentials. And it is, but the issue that we run into there is why is the issuer needing to be the one that pays for issuing that credential? So if you have somebody, let's say that's signing up to an exchange, or some kind of financial platform, they run through identity verification check with an identity verification provider like Onfido or someone like that. They go through that process, and at the end of the day, they are issued with a VC that represents the score of the IDV. And the idea behind that use case is they would then go to another platform that also recognizes either the issuer, who might be the platform itself or the identity verification company. And they accept that verifiable credential if they trust the issuer. And so the holder of that credential or the user of the platform in that example doesn't need to go through all that grief again. So it makes it a much better use case for the holder or the user. But the problem that we've run into is, like, what's the business model there? How do you make sure that the issuer, which is the one that's deriving a lot of the cost, how do they get a benefit from going through that process? So that's what we're kind of looking at first, is can we demonstrate to the issuer that they would have a clear value that would add to their business? And if we can do that fairly successfully and convince ourselves, and then that we see benefits for holders and also potentially verifiers in that chain, then that looks like something that we'd want to pursue. And then we start to look at that market a little bit more closely. So that's kind of the process that we would go through. And sorry, that's quite a long answer. So hopefully the context was helpful.
No, that's helpful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
By the way, I really love your answer there, Nick. And I'm just curious, other than the education use cases, and we know that that is a big use case because we do have a task force on the VC, with a VC EDU. And so other than the education use case and the reusable KYC, know your customer use cases, like what other markets and use cases that you see as some kind of product market fit or market tractions for SSI-related technologies?
Yeah, I think supply chain, Harrison, is one that we're definitely seeing. And I know that there's, I mean, kind of follow some of the other people in the kind of ecosystem, like Transmute and Sverti are ones that certainly kind of we look at what those guys are doing with kind of some admiration as well. And I think that's one where there's a real demonstrable benefit again for, you know, I think even I saw today there was a huge uptick in food production. So traceability of food is massive. And we've actually had conversations already, been approached by organic food producers. So there's obviously there is quite a big issue with non-organic food being passed off as organic. And obviously those food producers go to additional kind of lengths and as a consequence cost behind producing that food. And so they want to make sure that their products or produce is being correctly identified as organic. And of course, the wholesalers or the supermarkets purchasing that would want that same verifiability that what they're buying is indeed organic. So one of the big things we're kind of thinking about as well is supply chain. But almost every day that we either get approached or read something that makes us think that there's some other opportunities. And that's what I was kind of saying at the start, like it's such a blessing and a curse that the broad use of VCs is, I mean, it's massive. But of course, if you're really looking to do well in a market, kind of common sense and history tells you, you do need to start to specialize at some stage. So, but certainly kind of the compliance, workforce compliance is certainly seems quite strong, as does supply chain.
Thanks.
No worries.
Any other questions? So I'll ask one more last question from me. So earlier, we do know that, VCs and SSIs is a multi-sided platform problem, right? There's the issuers, there's the holder, there is verifiers, and earlier you mentioned in the education use cases, issuers are the ones who pay for issuing VCs. And in the markets I'm very familiar with, such as identity verification, KYC, it's the verifiers who pay, right? So my question is, what are the biggest challenges in actually creating and connecting these multi-sided platforms, and how can we overcome these challenges?
You couldn't have made the last question a bit easier, could you, Harrison? Yeah, I mean, these are hard ones. The one that we see quite often, I know we're kind of looking at currently building a kind of a messaging service that automatically sends the credential from the issuing platform or portal directly to the DID of the holder. And that would, as you know, as a result, then appear within their mobile app if they had that downloaded, and they would have the option to accept that credential, like Mike explained. And of course, the problem you hit there is, how do you get the holder signing up to have their own DID in the first place? And yeah, I mean, this is still a problem that we're wrestling with as well. Like, it's really just trying to increase education and probably working with the issuer and helping to educate their, if it's a, you know, university, their student base about, you know, DIDs and things like that. And then when they go to do that, to make that process as simple as, you know, signing up for an email account today. Because if you design something that's even remotely hard to do, or harder than, you know, the most basic function that, that people would do online today, it simply won't get used. People don't have the patience to kind of sit and wrestle with something. So we don't have any particularly, well, I don't at least have great answers for you, but I think it would be really around education and also just UX, making that sign up process as super simple and as super easy as possible. Potentially integrating it into issuers' apps would be helpful. So like you said, not needing to download multiple apps is a key part of that as well. I don't know if you'd have stuff to add there, Mike.
No, I think I was going to suggest the that's where the integration, the plug, that stuff, I think, comes in a big way, because it does. You do want to get out of the whole silos of 5,000 apps on everybody's phone, one for each different use case, because that's not going to fly. So I think getting those integration points and getting, you know, those standardized sort of apps, whether it's, you know, the university has their own app, or, you know, maybe we have to go play ball with the Google wallet or something like that. Who knows? But there's going to have to be a bit of that consolidation into fewer apps that can support multiple different VCs and multiple vendors, I think.
Thank you. And Phil, I see you have a question. Please.
Yes, thank you very much. I think I heard you say earlier that you do have a wallet. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I'm showing here on the screen, the black.
Right. Okay, so part. The question is, does your wallet support the issuer or the holder's creation of a verifiable presentation to be sent to a third party?
It does. I don't have that demo set up for you.
Okay, but it does. It does.
Yeah, if you you can scan a QR code from a presenter,
using VC API.
No.
The port protocol transport.
No, it's not. I think right now we're just we're bundling a presentation. I think it's the DIDCOM definition of a presentation, and then we're sending that to an API.
Okay, so you're using the DIDCOM family. Thank you.
I see Ori's got a question there as well, Mike. I don't know if you can pick that one up there, or if you've answered that.
Oh, I think I just answered it by saying.
Oh, yeah, it's answered. DIDCOM. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Any last questions? All right. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Nick. I just want to thank you guys again for taking the time to present here and answering some tough questions. Nick, in particular, like my last question is actually a very, very hard question, and I don't have a great answers myself. So thank you for taking the time to answer those questions. Actually, we do have. Oh, never mind. Keith, do you have any questions? Last questions?
No, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So, just want to thank you guys again, for taking the time. Lastly, any introductions, reintroductions, announcements, or reminders that people want to, talk about and didn't have the chance to in the beginning? All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.